Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. It is now underway. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Bill, how you doing tonight?
You know, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. George, we have a fascinating show coming up tonight. We've got our in-studio guest, Charlie, coming up in just a little bit after we have some rapid-fire conversation. You know that snappy banter we have?
Yeah, snappy patter.
Let's start with a little of that.
Okay.
George, we're going to talk about step two tonight, and we're going to process that a little bit because every week on Real Recovery, we like to talk about a step because it's one of the important calisthenics to recovery. Is doing the steps.
All right? I love that. You talk about doing our exercises, taking our medicine, and that's what the steps are. Nothing magical here. It's scripture that certain people put numbers to. And step two is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
So let me look at, there's a passage here in Luke. It says, take up your cross and follow me. I know you love that passage, George.
Got to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. And what it is we don't have a one and done. I find Jesus, everything's good, I'm good to go, I can go back to doing what I want. I think part of the coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves is we see, if we really think about it, that God has allowed us to get through our addiction and all the stuff that happens and keep us alive, that he's had us all along. And that light kind of comes on that, hey, I'm not in this alone. Maybe there's a bigger plan. And it goes from being a lot bigger than just stopping using, that maybe there's a God that has a plan, who loves me, that's kept me alive, and has a plan for me in my life. And that gets us into three. But the insanity is doing the same things and believing we're going to get a different result. That's an old cliche, but it's true.
It is true. And cliches are true.
Some of them.
When it says, take up your cross and follow me, that means being willing to die in order to follow Jesus, and that means dying to self, doesn't it?
Oh, that's very well said. And really, what step one is about is we want to be our own God in our life, and we're not. And that's always been the story of humanity going all the way back, that man wants to be God and deny what God has done. And when we get the gift of desperation because we're dying in our addiction, we think that maybe there is a way out, and there is, and it's God, and maybe we're willing to do what it takes.
Okay, George, I want to pop quiz a couple of things.
I'm
on
ready,
you
baby.
Are you ready?
Let's bring it.
Okay,
bring
did
it
you bring
on.
Your
bring
A game
tonight?
Did you bring your A game?
I don't need my A game with you, Arnold.
Really?
Let's go. Yeah.
Really? You want a piece of me, schoolboy?
Throw us in the protective glass here.
Yeah,
I'm over there.
Bulletproof. 3 inches.
Okay.
I want it 5 inches. All right. let's see. Once you know we've made the decision to get help, okay, how hard is that? Once you make that decision to get help, I mean, how fully absorbing is it to get yourself to a point where you know that there has to be a higher power that's going to restore you to sanity?
Okay. My personal opinion is we don't get there. God pulls us there.
Okay.
In that a dead man doesn't know he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
If we did, I have to go to myself on this, I would have gone, you know, this drinking and drugging isn't a good idea. I'm going to stop. It's not doing anybody any good. But not me. I got to go to plan B and then plan C. And one day the light kind of hits you and you go, hey, there is a way out and I'm going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very painful to get there. A lot of people die in the process.
Mm-hmm. Now, George, you're a licensed chemical dependency counselor. And I think that I've seen that diploma. I think there's that fading invisible ink on it. But
how hard is that to get? Not
it's
hard.
It's not real hard.
Can't
you
be that hard.
Go on
no.
the internet, www.degree.com, and I think you just get one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit about this idea of as you're recovering and you're fearing relapse, you're getting to the point where I don't want to relapse and I don't want to fall back into temptation, and you're starting to feel agitated. How do you fight that? How do you fight that temptation?
Well, can I step back a minute?
Please,
I think for
please.
A lot of us, I remember for me when my dad said, you know, why do you keep doing this? It's who I am. This is what I do. I don't mean to do this, but I keep doing this. I can't stop. I want to stop, and I can't. It gets into Romans 7, that which I don't want to do, I find myself doing. It's the process of reaching out to God because we can't stop. We don't want to stop. But we do. We don't want to stop, you know, start hurting people and you know, ourselves. But we can't stop it. It's who we are. And we need to go out to God. The three pertinent ideas is that I'm alcoholic and I cannot solve my own problem. And probably no human power could. But God can and will if he sought. Well, we don't seek God. God seeks us. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stand firm on that one.
No, I love that. I'm just trying to dig down a little bit. And because I've had some occasions recently with guys I've worked with that had a fair amount of sobriety, and then they relapsed. And it was drinking on Friday, drinking on Saturday, and then meth on Sunday. And I'm thinking, when that bubbles up and you've got sobriety and you've got Christ in your life, and you're at that point of, I'm feeling like I want to use. How does George Frazer overcome that?
One of the recovery books I've read is, at a certain time, the only defense from that first drink must come from the higher power. And the higher power for me is Jesus. That's the highest power. I've got 31 years sobriety. I figure my odds of dying sober are 50-50, okay? And that's because I know me. Mm-hmm. And I know how broken I am. And every day, we need to make a decision. Who are we going to serve? And every day we need to pray for sobriety. And every day we need to pray for guidance. There's no momentum in this deal.
Mm-hmm.
God's plan for us, and I know when we hear Charlie's story, is that God wants us all sober. Where I don't know how it breaks down is what part's mine. I think most of it's his. But I think we need to do our part. And Jesus said, if you love me, you're going to keep my commandments. So let's start there. Instead of trying to not drink, let's try to be more Christ-like. I don't think you can lose your salvation. I think you can lose your sobriety. Too much of my life has been spent trying to help people get sober rather than saved. I'm going to a funeral tomorrow at 3. We know guys who die all the time who have addiction problems. There's no guarantee of sobriety, but there is a guarantee with Jesus, because he says we're redeemed and we're sealed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to go with. So if you don't want to drink, become more Christ-like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about stopping a behavior. It's about developing a relationship with the living God, and that can only happen through Christ.
Awesome. Okay, now, George, let's talk a little bit about, as you make effort, as you try not to use and you try not to follow your desire to use, isn't that a little bit like holding the beach ball underwater? It's such a struggle, and the odds are it's going to flip out of your hands and come to the surface. Don't you have to have a hotter passion that burns brighter and hotter than your desire to satisfy the flesh? Don't you, when the call comes in, the spirit has to answer it, not the flesh?
Yeah, and I think for a lot of us, the way we work that out is figure out, once we have our relationship with God, is figure out how to make our recovery and our walk a big event deal. My using was a big event deal. My recovery needs to be a big event deal, because I have a big event God. And what happens is God picks us up and says, okay, I've always had you, and here's what I would like you to do. But he doesn't help us to get sober if he doesn't have a job for us. And I think tonight we're going to hear that in the story, that you can go talk to people that are struggling with their addiction. Your ministry, your primary purpose is to stay sober and help other people become servants of Jesus Christ. I don't want to stop the behavior, Bill, and not get forgiveness and not get saved, because it's appointed once to man to die and then the judgment. And that's what we're looking at. But I think in John 10:10, Jesus said, I came to give you life and give it to you abundantly. And the abundant life is why we wanted to use. Bruce Springsteen's right. I think our friend Alex is going to go see him. Everybody has a hungry heart. And instead of filling it with Jesus, we have these God substitutes of coke, sex, money, power that aren't good enough. And you have to keep doing them and doing them, and they kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So be grateful if you're an addict that God allowed you to get into your addiction and not have success. You would have missed the whole point of life.
Yeah, awesome. Now, George, if these dots connect, let me know, as it relates to step two.
Okay.
It's in Luke chapter 5. Jesus is on his way into town. What's so funny?
I'm laughing with Charlie. Oh,
okay, yeah, you guys carry on your own little thing
here.
I'll just be the one in the studio working.
Yeah, reading the Bible.
Good. As I'm reading the Bible, doing study here. Anyway, Jesus was in one of the towns. A man came along who was covered with leprosy. He saw Jesus. He fell with his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out with his hand and said, I'm willing. Now, isn't that kind of step two in a way? Lord, are you willing to help me with my addiction?
I love it. It is.
Okay.
It is for sure. And then we have to be willing to do our part, too. I mean, it's not a one-and-done deal. I think
he
told somebody else, do you want to be healed? Pick up your mat and walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you want me to do? So I'm not a theologian, obviously, because that would require some intelligence, which God has not given me. But I do believe we have to do our part.
Right. And Jesus was willing to touch a man who had leprosy, whereas I don't even like shaking your hand.
Well, that's kind of painful.
But I mean that in a good way.
No, I know you were honest.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to be honest.
Yeah, you were
honest.
All
right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we have a fascinating story coming up with Charlie. You're going to love tonight. Don't go anywhere. So glad to have you listen to Real Recovery tonight. Thanks for being with us. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us. It is that time of the season, George, where the potholes are showing up, and there's one by my house so big there's actually a coffee shop inside. Very big.
Nice.
They serve a nice latte, though. A nice, nice latte. Anyway, we've got Charlie in studio tonight, and he's going to tell his story. And, you know, he, in conversation with him last week, he was telling me about, with great candor and honesty, how he recognized there was just this gaping hole in his heart, which is the human condition. Mm-hmm. And yet he recognized it and understood it. And that's when he realized he started reaching for stuff that wasn't ever going to fill it. And he's here to tell that story. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I had a wide hole
in
my chest, in my heart. It started when I was a kid. I don't know. I was a little different, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel right. I didn't feel accepted by anyone or anything. And now I had known Jesus young in my life,
mm-hmm.
But I had never really understood or maybe even believed that I was worthy of God or Jesus. And that it separated me from so many things in my life. I can remember feeling uncomfortable even singing in church or dancing or anything, just the smallest things that people probably did so naturally. I didn't feel like I could do any of those things. I felt alone all the time. And at a young age, about 12, probably 13 years old, I found drugs and I found alcohol. And it filled that gap for me. It filled that hole. And I thought that I had literally showing up, that it made me no longer afraid. It made me feel like I was accepted, and it made me feel complete. And at the same time, it turned me into a selfish, arrogant, self-centered person that people didn't want to be around. But I didn't know that, and mm-hmm. I didn't really know any different. So for many years and many of my teenage years, I continued to use alcohol and drugs to fill that hole. And, you know, life carried on and sin carried on in my life. And then there was a period in time where, you know, I finally met a young woman, a wonderful woman at that. And, you know, she loved me for what I think was me. And, you know, she really helped me a lot and helped me build confidence outside of drugs and alcohol. And being an unsupervised child or teenager, so to say, we ended up, she ended up getting pregnant at a very, very young age. And we had our first child at 18. We were married shortly thereafter, or in between there, and life again carried on full of sin, and most of that sin, if not all of it, driven by my alcoholism and drug addiction. I was not a very present father in the beginning or in the middle for a very long period of time, but I decided it'd be a good idea to join the Marine Corps, and I went away for my boot camp time, and I came back, and what the Marine Corps had done for me has really turned me into even more of an arrogant person, made me feel like I'd gone from feeling less than to feeling better than. I was better than, you know, we used to say civilians, or however you want to put it, and I was higher than they were. And I acted accordingly. And I wasn't a very nice person. And I certainly wasn't a nice person to that woman that was so good to me. And I mean, more power, you know, credit to her. She hung in there. I mean, she really tried. You know, she tried to have a good family. And I wasn't having it. My addiction had a grip or a hold on me that I can't even explain it. You know, it almost killed me many times. And so, again, like I'd said, life carried on. We had another child that was 20 years old. Another beautiful child, another blessing. Both of my children are so wonderful and are such a blessing. they missed a lot of me because of this. And I went through the Marine Corps and I finished my time. And my wife, you know, and I had a separation time for a period of time, for a little while, because of my addiction and my drug use. I had finally pushed her far enough away that she didn't want anything to do with me. She had moved back to Minnesota, and I finished up my time in the Marine Corps. And I had moved back, and we went through some hard time, and we ended up reconciling and getting back together, which at the time I thought was the greatest thing. And we had some good years, a couple of good years. You know, I had kind of straightened up a little bit when we had gotten back together. I wasn't anywhere near as bad as I was. And, you know, I was a father for a little bit, you know. And that carried on for a couple of years. And from there, pretty much, it just got worse again. I didn't, you know, at no point in time had I, you know, found God or Christ. We attended church from time to time. But, you know, there was no dedication. There was nothing. You know, it was just surface, you know. And the sad part was is that I believed in God and I believed in Christ, and I knew they were real. My back was turned to him for a long, long time. So that went on for a while, and drugs and alcohol got worse and worse. And I robbed my children of having a good father because of drugs and alcohol for many years, which they deserved a great father because they're great kids. And eventually, I pushed my wife away again. And this time, you know, she left for good. And she should. She should have. I had done nothing but neglect her and hurt her. You know, she was a good woman to me as much as possible. I mean, she's not a perfect human being. I mean, she made her mistakes too. But, you know, really, I take a lot of that blame. I mean, a lot of her choices, I believe, were based upon my decisions and my use. And, you know, from there, it escalated and it got really bad.
Yeah.
You know, I was alone. I didn't have anybody. I didn't have her as a crutch to lean on, you know. I didn't have that codependent relationship. And I started to really just kind of bury myself. And then, you know, it was about a year after, you know, I met another woman who, you know, God bless her heart, she picked up kind of where my wife had left off. And you know, I feel horrible for her, but, you know, I was at my worst. She tried everything in her power to try to make me better. And, you know, nothing's going to make us better. I mean, we have to want to get better on our own. And, you know, anybody, I'm pretty sure everybody in this room knows the only way that's going to happen is through God. And, you know, I was not anywhere near that.
Okay. Now, George, I know between us we've got about 80 questions to start asking. Would you like to go first?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a great story.
But it's so densely packed right now. We got to start processing a little bit more of this.
Right. You got to back it up a little
bit
because you got to keep it slow on our level because it'll go right by us. But what I'm interested in, you were raised in a Christian household, and and you had a place to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the consequences besides your loss of your marriage that, you know, were inside you? What kind of stuff was going on in Charlie with this process? Because my guess is you had to know it's not working, but I like doing it, but it's not working. And what were the attempts at early recovery? You said you tried to quit for a while.
Yeah, I think I went to my first meeting at 21. You know, an incident happened in the Marine Corps with my wife, and of course it wasn't a good one. And I had gone and I'd sat in on a meeting, and there was a bunch of guys, you know, 35, 40 years of recovery that took one look at me and said, you know, you're not going to make it. And I pretty much walked back out that door, and I think I was drinking a day or two later. But, you know, and that just, I think, shows how important it is in some of these meetings, how important it is to be welcoming to the younger person. But, yeah, my consequences, I don't know how you want me to put it. I was an empty vessel. I was, mm-hmm. I was alone. I didn't feel loved. I didn't feel good about myself. And I never did. I mean, everything was a front. I mean, the arrogance, the cockiness, you know, it was all a front, George. It didn't add up or amount to nothing. You know, it wasn't good. You
and
know?
The drugs and the drinking were an escape.
Oh, all the way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was the only thing that I had. The drugs and the alcohol were my best friend.
You bet.
I mean, they were my everything, and I would do anything to protect them. You know, whether that meant sacrificing time with my wife or my children or my job, it didn't matter. I mean, as long as I could protect, because they were the only thing that made me feel good. You know, that was the only thing that I understood mentally in my head that was an answer. That was a solution to me. And it made me, in my mind, complete and, you know, gave me the ability to do more when, in fact, it hampered everything. It was doing the exact opposite. It was destroying everything in my life.
That is so well said, because part of the reason it's so hard for us to stop using is that it's the only thing that's working, even though it's killing us. In the loneliness, this is our best friend. This is our lover. This is our comfort. And it's actually our God.
Mm. Yep.
Because it's running our life. But to give it up, I got nothing then.
Yeah, it's a profound point you're making, George and Charlie. This really is quite profound.
It's Charlie did such a good job of describing the loneliness and the actor and the play, and I got a double life going. I know who I am, but I got to portray this other guy because otherwise it's over, and it gets worse and worse, and it gets very lonely, and it's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Really is.
It is. Now, Charlie, when you talk about being in the Marines, of course, a lot of us have this thought in our head, well, you can't drink when you're in the Marines, right?
I don't. I wouldn't. You know, we used to call it a fraternity with guns. You know, it was
like that.
Yeah,
I'm
signing up in the morning.
It was, you know, if anything, the Marine Corps taught me how to be a functional alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have the ability to not be there. You know, the punishment was so great that, you know, you made yourself follow through in the morning. And I would be late. I lived off base. I would be late all the time. But I would manage to, you know, either talk my way out of it or whatever the case may be. But, you know, that's all we did was drink. Mm-hmm. And we weren't the best group of guys to be around. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, if you were in the group, it was, you know, we thought we were the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt. But, yeah, our focus was, you know, obviously protecting the country, of course, first and foremost. But, you know, when we weren't doing that, it was drinking.
Mm.
I mean, it was, that's just what we did.
Mm-hmm. Do the Marine Corps sort of help develop in you a sense of superiority in terms of your attitude and the way you carry yourself and all that? Because you said you started to feel like you were better than others, better than civilians. And yeah. Is that part of the training?
Yeah.
I don't mean that in a negative way. I just, you know, you guys are asked to do very intense things, and you got to have confidence coming out of your ears, right?
Well, you do.
Yeah.
And you need to carry yourself as such, mm-hmm. you know. I don't want to say that a superiority or, you know, but it was kind of that. I mean, it was. We believed that we were better than, and that you should be thankful mm-hmm. that we're here mm-hmm. and, you know, standing on, you know, the walls or however you want to put
sure.
it.
Sure.
You know, we are protecting your freedom, which rightfully so, no question about it. We did, and we definitely deserve all the recognition for
sure.
that. You know, for all the guys that, you know, spent their times overseas. And I mean, they're heroes.
They're all heroes.
You know, but I was just trying to pretty much say how we meshed coming back here to the States,
you know,
or being here and how we walked around here. This is just for me. I can't speak for any other Marine.
Mm.
I can only speak for myself. And I had, you know, this attitude that, you know, because I was a Marine, I was better than. And I did have some type of superiority
mm-hmm.
in the sense of you haven't done what I've done. And, you know, and that carried on in my behavior and
yeah.
how I treated people.
Yeah. You would have no problem slapping a man silly, would you?
No,
maybe later in the show I can watch that happen. We're going to take a little break when we come back. Lots more with Charlie. Welcome to the show. So glad you joined us tonight on Real Recovery. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the Real Recovery. We're so glad you joined us tonight. You know, George, I always love pulling out Proverbs 19:3. People ruin their lives by their own foolishness, and then they're angry at the Lord. You know, pretty exposing. It exposes you, doesn't it, Charlie?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't you like, okay, you blow up your own life, and then you're mad at God?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to back up too far because you're on such a roll going forward, but I'm thinking about what you said earlier about feeling like you were a little bit empty in high school, and I think that's the human condition for a lot of kids in high school. But did you find other like-minded people that you could be using with, or were you using by yourself, or were you in a party group, or how'd that go? Because I know listeners are always wondering what kids their kids are hanging out with.
Right. You know, I fell in with an unsupervised group.
Gotcha.
You
okay.
know, I mean, that's the best way to put it.
Gotcha.
We weren't, you know, don't get me wrong. I have two wonderful parents, mm-hmm. and I love them, and they're wonderful people. I wouldn't trade them for anything. And I think I was a little bit too much for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I think about 13, 14 years old, you know, I'd gotten a job and I'd gotten a scooter, and that was pretty much it. I was off to the races.
Mm, yeah.
I was able to travel.
Transportation.
Yeah,
that's
on
a
my
big
own.
Deal.
And
yeah.
at 14 years old, getting transportation.
It's a big deal.
Probably, it's a huge deal. It's probably not a best idea, though.
No.
Especially considering the fact that I wasn't hanging out with a great crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very, very much like-minded people. You know, we were all broken. Some of them are still broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know of a couple of them. That I don't know if they'll ever come out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we acted like teenage kids
sure.
without supervision. We
sure.
just, we did whatever we wanted to do. And drugs and alcohol were a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a good situation for a teenager.
Sin is fun for a season. You know, we look back on that in high school, and it's like, of course that's what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're a kid. If you got some access, you got the means to do it, we find each other, don't we? We find people.
Yeah.
And that's real important when we get later in the story about finding people in recovery. But the Bible's right. That is fun for a short time. And then the consequences, and as you said, some of the guys and the people you were hanging out with, they didn't get out of it yet. They might not get out of it. Some people don't, Bill.
What kind of supervision did you have? Were you unsupervised when you were in high school, or were you pretty carefully supervised?
Are you talking about state supervision or my parents?
No, I'm talking about your parents.
My parents were divorced, and my mom, from age 15 on, had cancer, so I was kind of on my own.
Okay. Not that you were unsupervised. You were just, they didn't have as much energy and time to pay attention to
you. Yeah, I was out
of
control, and I had a huge attitude. I still have a huge attitude, but you know what I mean? And I can see it. And if you're a smart kid today, you can play the double life, and parents don't really know, and maybe they don't want to know. And it's possible, and it starts young. What I'm interested in is, didn't you kind of think, maybe this isn't right? Maybe I need to stop this?
Yeah.
Any time
that I probably wasn't using, I felt that I probably shouldn't be making those decisions. But
did you think you had a problem back then?
No.
Okay.
No, I think...
problem, he had a solution.
Yes, that's exactly
right.
He had a solution.
And, you know, really, I thought that, you know, the people that weren't doing it, I mean, God, they are missing out. How have they not figured this out yet? You know, because in my eyes, I kind of had this thought that everybody else felt like I did. Like, this was normal, you know, because, and that's what I, you know, become accustomed to. You know, the emptiness, the, you know, waking up in the morning, you know, feeling incomplete, you know, like an open hole is in my heart. And, okay, well, I'm going to grab some drugs and some alcohol and I'll solve that and we'll do it again tomorrow. It was just continuous like that for years.
Do you think you were an adult? Did you grow up too early, you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. No question.
But that's attractive at that time. You know, we want to do what the adults are doing because it's fun and it's exciting and it's neat. And we got more game than the regular guys. Come on. We don't need to be going to class and doing that and getting the little milks out and going to the library. Come on.
Right.
No.
Would you rather go to the library or get high, drink, and chase girls?
Library.
That's why I didn't hang around with guys like you.
I know. Yeah. That's why we were friends.
You really weren't dying to hang around us.
No.
But it does seem attractive. Satan's very deceptive, isn't he?
Oh, man. He is.
He'll make house calls and answer every one of your questions. He'll take all the time in the world answering your questions.
Very good. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that?
Oh, no brainer.
Sin is fun for us. You know, the first part of John 10 is about the destructiveness. The enemy comes. He wants to kill you.
Yep.
Got pretty close, didn't he?
He did.
But I find it a little fascinating, too, George, as Charlie goes into the Marine Corps, and you think, well, there's the golden opportunity to clean up your life, right? This is where you clean up. This is where you get on the straight and narrow and you get off your substance abuse problems. And it sounds like that was the place where you could do just the opposite. You could, as long as you were up at 5:30 to run 7 miles, you could be at the drinking till 3 in the morning, right?
Yeah, but that wasn't my thought when I joined.
Of course not.
When I joined the Marine Corps, I thought, you know, I had an option. I could go to college. I had a son at the time, and it was, you know, my father looking at me saying, I'm not going to take care of your family. You need to do something to take care of your family. And he suggested, why don't you join a branch of the service?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I went out, and the Marine Corps recruiter was the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, you know, I'm going to join the Marine Corps. This is going to change me forever in, you know, all the best ways possible. But unfortunately for me, because of my alcoholism and my addiction, it did that in some ways, but in others it just magnified my drinking and my alcoholism. And maybe it would have been the same. It probably would have been the same if I'd went to college. It wouldn't have mattered where I went. You know, Marines or college, it didn't matter where. I was an alcoholic, and I was, you know, I was born that way, or however you want to put it, you know. It didn't matter where I was. I was going to be abusing alcohol, and I was going to be abusing drugs. So.
I get that. My dad had the same conversation with me. He said, you know, you should join the service. I go, why don't you? I don't want to do that.
How'd that go over, George? Yeah. Was that a big hit with your dad?
No.
Yeah,
no, my dad.
So.
Well, there was a big hit with my dad.
That's after you made that
but,
suggestion.
But, you know, that's interesting. You can go to treatment, too. And you can find guys there that are using while they're in treatment.
Absolutely. Wherever
you go. And, I mean, my guess is this was one of his buckle-down moments that maybe dad's right. And there's a part of me that does want to take care of my family. But we find each other. This addiction is so powerful that even our best motive, you know, and our best laid plans, we mess it up.
Yeah.
But God allows him to get through it. I think it's a big deal. You want in the service. I mean, what a great sacrifice. You can't get killed, you know.
Yeah.
And anybody who does that for their country, that's a big deal. But it doesn't stop your addiction, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. You would think with the discipline it would. You'd think, gosh, that's great. He's not going to have a problem. Uh-uh. Just find out when you can use, and you just work around it.
Right. So, Charlie, you were okay with hitting some lows, weren't you? Lows were something you just overcame, right?
I got used to it.
You got used to it.
Cost of doing business, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it would be bad for a while, and then it...
Right. So you've collected a number of lows, and you've collected a bunch of disappointments and things that you go, I can overcome this, and you do. But when does... When does Jesus reach down and go, okay, let me get your attention in a new way?
Last January, I did something that was unthinkable for me. And
I don't want to know what it is.
I'll basically put it, you know, I damaged and I hurt my son worse than I ever thought I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget for the rest of my life waking up the next day and thinking to myself, you know, truly for the first time stepping back and thinking to myself, what have I done? What have I done? And calling out for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly, you know, I got on my knees and I called out for help. And, you know, Christ came, Jesus came, God came. I mean, he wasn't just going to give it to me. You know, it wasn't just going to be like, oh, everything's fixed and everything's great. You know, he's made me work for it, you know. But... You know, I never wanted to go back to that moment, and I don't know if I'll ever be fully forgiven by my son for that. And, you know, I owe him so many apologies, and an apology just isn't even the right word. He's a great kid and a great human being, and he did not deserve to have a father like that. That's when Christ came down that following day. You know, I remember my dad asking me, because, of course, my dad found out about what had happened. And, you know, he called me, and the first words out of his mouth, so what are you going to do now? And I made some decisions that, you know, I never thought I'd make again. And I took some action, and I went and took care of myself for a little while. And, you know, I came back, and... I started spending time doing things a little different. You know, I got involved with the ministry, Fresh Start Recovery, in February of last year. And that started to change my life. I started going, you know, of course, back to church, and I started seeking God, and then I started attending 12-step meetings, and that really helped. You know, I mean, that changed a lot of things, and that went on for a period of time. And in July, actually, there was I had a mix-up with one doctor and another doctor, and it threw me for a loop for about 2 weeks. It was nothing that was intended, but it's just what happened. And but the funny part was is when that happened, you know, I was not working my 12-step program, and I was just kind of going to church. You know, I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't
checking the box.
I was checking the box. That's a perfect way of putting it. And again, I found myself at a point where I just, I kind of asked myself how I had gotten there. But the funny part is Christ had been working in my life already up to that point. And, you know, he kind of, I think, was just waiting there on the sidelines a little bit and saying, you know, are you ready to work for me? You know, are you ready to do what I have planned?
To suit up, huh?
Yeah, you're ready to get the job done.
Yeah.
And things, at that point in time, when I made that commitment, things dramatically changed in my life. I started working a program. I started following the 12 steps. I started wanting and being willing to help others and sponsor others and wanting to reach out to do better things, you know, not for myself but for others, try to carry the message the best I can. And, you know, I'm no way a pro. You know, I'm calling myself an amateur is being nice.
That's good humility.
Well, it's the truth.
Yeah. We're going to take just a little break. When we come back, we're going to hear the rest of Charlie's story. You're listening to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you're with us tonight. Bill Arnold, George Fraser in studio impersonating radio professionals. And that's what we do. George, you had a question for Charlie, our in-studio guest.
Well, actually, it's a, you know, really mature insight, I think, coming from me.
Oh, good. Well, I will. I'll alert the media coming.
It's just something that really it touched me. Yeah. It's never happened before.
I know. That's why I'm going to alert the media.
But you were talking about, Bill, Charlie was talking about, you know, what Christ was doing in his life. And one of the things that jumped out to me was his heavenly father loved him enough to give him an earthly father who loved him enough to tell him the truth when he said, what are you going to do now, son?
That is pretty profound.
And, well, I kind of had the same experience. And, okay. I think at that point you realize you're checkmate because you really always want to please your father. And in this case, you were a father.
Yeah.
And you stubbed your toe. And now your father is asking you, what are you going to do? And I love that because not what are you thinking, not what are you saying, what are you going to do? And I love that. You manned up. You know, real men, if they're sorry about what they do, they change it. And that's what you did, and you took some action. What was your first action on that?
Well, I sought out help outside of, you know, I went to a place in Ohio.
Okay.
That deals in some in addiction and dual diagnosis, you know, mental health stuff. And I spent a month out there getting myself healthy.
Love it.
And, you know, that changed my life. And, you know, testament to it's Linder Center of Hope. They changed my life.
Nice.
There's no question. So, you know, I spent that time out there and then I came back and like I said, I was quickly, probably within, 3 weeks time, going to Fresh Start Recovery. And, I had some people and the funny part is they were my wife's family that was reaching out to me, to help me and, very Christian family. I mean, not that my parents aren't, just, you know, their family was reaching out to me, or her family was, and, you know, her brother is just amazing. I mean, his knowledge of the Bible is unbelievable, and her brother-in-law had helped me tremendously as well, and I met a guy named John, which you guys know John.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, he is my mentor.
Nice.
I found a sponsor, and his name is Chris. And, you know, through all of those people that gave so freely to me, you know, who stuck in there and still do to this day, you know, they helped me change, and those were the changes. And that's where the changes started, you know, because when I went away to Ohio, I didn't still, I still didn't have, you know, Christ yet. I knew Christ. I always knew Christ. I accepted Christ into my heart when I was a young child. But I didn't know what it meant to live for Christ. And I didn't know.
He was not your functional master, was he?
No, he was not.
He was on your resume, but not really.
On my resume is a great way of putting it. You know, just he was on my resume. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe in God.
Yeah,
I believe in Jesus.
You voted yes for God, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. But you've never been to the White House and shaken his hand,
no,
right?
No, not even close.
Okay, all right.
So, I haven't even made it to the front yard. You know.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, these people came into my life and, you know, they helped guide me in a way that I didn't know was possible. And I didn't know that people would do that. You know, I kind of said to a couple of them jokingly a couple of times, you know, so do I write you a check or what do I do? So how do I pay you? Do you take cash?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but these people were just doing it because, you know, they were kind, loving and caring. And, you know, I didn't understand that unselfishness. And, you know, they helped the last year of my life, plus year of my life, they have all been a part of it in an amazing way. And they have helped me grow to places I didn't know was possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought I was going to die over a year ago, just over a year ago. I thought it was over,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I wanted to die. You know, I didn't want to live anymore. I mean, Satan had almost won.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was at that point. I was on the cusp.
Oh, and, that's terrible.
And I found something different. And I found that in Christ. And I found that in God. And he's continuing to carry me forward. And I'm doing things in my life for him that I never thought I'd do.
Mm-hmm.
And now I get to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changing things for me. You know, I was just asked to be on the board of a church seed for Grace in the City,
mm-hmm.
which is seated for 2017. If you were to tell me that I was going to sit on the board of a church, I would have laughed in your face and bet everything I own against it a year ago.
God takes us ordinary people and does extraordinary things with us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably what you're experiencing right now.
Yeah, very much so.
That's part of God's plan, God's purpose in your life, and you're starting to enjoy some of those benefits in a big way.
I am, and I feel them every morning when I wake up. And that's another thing. I was never happy before, guys. Like we said, filling that hole with the alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I was never happy. I didn't feel any peace or any serenity. Or there was just misery in my life,
mm-hmm.
and that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up every morning happy, and I can't explain to anybody what a change that is for me. And if you could feel, or if you feel like I did, you know, just always hurting, always miserable, always looking at the worst side of things, you know, never being. Always being a pessimist and not an optimist,
mm-hmm.
however you want to look at it. You know, Christ brought me to a point where I get to be happy every day. And I get to love who I am as opposed to hating and loathing who I am.
Mm.
And that has been the most miraculous change in my life.
That's great. I love that. You know, you start working with people, Bill. You know, you need help, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Step two, came to believe power greater than ourselves to restore sanity. I'm going to take some action here. Okay, what's the angle on these guys? These guys are helping me, but what's their angle?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, what is it going to cost me money? What's the deal? And then once you get it, you realize you give it away to keep it, that the real joy of your recovery is you are able to serve God and other people. And from somebody who's totally self-centered and egocentric like we are when we're using, it's a miracle. And it doesn't get better than that, and I'm so encouraged to hear it. It doesn't surprise me that you're on the board of the church and you're working with guys. This is what God created you to do, and now you know that you're not a waste. And when we get wasted, what we wind up doing is wasting our life, and we waste God's plan in our life. And when you get sober and you find Christ and you start doing the work, you go, hey, this is as good as it gets.
Yeah, that's so true. It's just awesome. And from
cool story
for
huh?
Charlie to say that he was feeling almost suicidal in a way. I mean,
yeah.
I knew you were going to take action, but you just sort of was okay with your life ended.
Yeah.
To every day I wake up now and I feel a real emotion called happiness. And that is not something you're generating. It's something that God is gifting into your life.
Sense of purpose.
Sense of purpose. Dang, that's great. That's a great story.
Not dependent on circumstances because I have it.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
His solution was almost suicide.
Now
his solution is Christ and helping others. Beautiful story. Thank you.
Thank you
for sharing it. Help my recovery.
It's so inspiring. And I love when you can come into the studio and say, this is what God has done in my life, because I think that is the message that other listeners hear and they feel moved and changed and transformed by. Because we just need the community of each other encouraging each other.
Yeah, it's not too good to be true. And if you're out there listening, go, well, it would never happen to me. Well, there's three of us in here that never thought it would happen to us either, and it did. And that's the story. We're sticking to it because it's true.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well,
four of us. Sorry, Alex.
Yeah.
He never messed up, though.
Well, no, but I mean, just coming to faith in Christ is a whole, being born again is a brand new experience. So we're all sinners that were once dead, now we're alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Amen. That wraps up another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. I am so glad you joined us tonight. If you want to pass this message along to a friend or relative, go to myfaithradio.com, go to the show page, Real Recovery, and you can find everything you need there. Thanks, everyone. Good night, and God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.